Good evening. Welcome to the Slayer Report. Today is November 10th, 2016. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Well, we've had quite a week. We've got a lot to talk about tonight, and we did a great interview with John Rappaport and Joseph Farrell, which we switched in and posted today. We're going to move Eric Best's wonderful interview on Scenario Thinking till next week. I know the election is of great interest to everyone. I'm in the Netherlands tonight. I'm headed for Dublin, Ireland tomorrow, and then I'm going to be in Amish country in southeastern PA on Monday and for the week, and then back in Tennessee the following weekend. I want to thank you for your great response and interest in Dr. Farrell's crowdfund and your patience. We anticipate launching the website to raise money starting next week. I'll keep you posted. And also, thank you for the great response on our interest. We're doing a May 2018 Australia trip to the Australian Outback with Richard Dolan. For all of those who've expressed an interest, we're holding a slot for you until we come back with a proposal. And again, if you're interested in reserving a slot for that trip, again, May 2018 to Australia, to the Australian Outback with Richard Dolan, just let us know at customer service. Finally, I'm working on a new prayer book, 2017, for our Christmas card. If you're interested in submitting your favorite scriptures, just also send them to customer service. Our theme tonight is The Man in the Arena. It's a quote from Theodore Roosevelt. Let me just read it to you. It is not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes up short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming, but who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat. That's Teddy Roosevelt, who was the 26th president of the United States. And it's probably a pretty apt description for Donald Trump, who is now president-elect to be the 45th president of the United States. We all have to start with a major relief. No one sat down and said, let's be real excited about making a reality TV show host president of America. The reality is the country voted essentially to close the history book on the Clinton dynasty. Clinton lost, and that's a matter of great relief for many, many people, including many allies and yours truly. The Clintons were literally the most corrupt politicians and their allies, the Bushes, in the history of American politics. They and their backers destroyed the Democratic Party and with it much of America. If Bernie Sanders had been the nominee, we'd be talking today about the fact that the Democrats had won the White House and the Senate. Someone in the New York Post wrote today, "The Clinton world is done," another Clintonista told the Post, snarking that if Hillary could be stopped by Barack Obama in the 2008 primaries and then Trump in 2016, she has no business ever running for elective office again. Quote, "She was beaten by a community organizer who was senator for 25 minutes and a reality TV show host," that source explains. They don't create adjectives to describe this. It's an incredible moment in history. If you look at the map, it's very interesting. About 90% of the country by place voted for Trump. Clinton's support was very much aggregated into the big cities. And if you look at the map, what you're seeing is the heartland versus the coasts, or I would say the productive versus the subsidized. Clearly, we've had a real Republican sweep. The Republicans took the White House. They've preserved the Senate. They continue to preserve the House. And they have a clear majority of the state houses. And so one of the responses you've seen, the market has performed much better than everyone expected in the event of a Trump victory. And I think part of that is because the full Republican sweep is good for business, if you will. It's also good for a push for infrastructure, which clearly Trump has made a big push for. and referred to in his victory speech and clearly intends to do something major about U.S. infrastructure. There are a lot of heroes behind the Trump victory. One is the New York Police Department, which I'm going to talk about a little bit more. Another one is clearly WikiLeaks and Julian Assange. Another is Scott Adams, the creator of Dilbert, whose blog was a major force in explaining to us or explaining to folks why they ought to consider voting for Trump. And then you had a variety of people in the media, in fact, who did try and be fair. My theory on much of what happened, two major mistakes on Clinton's part, the support from Republican establishment. The more the Republican establishment supported Clinton, the clearer it became that Trump had managed to organize a movement of outsiders against insiders. And it worked very much to Trump's advantage. The second thing was Clinton saying, referring to half of Trump's supporters as the deplorables. As I said, if you look at the vote, we very much had a vote of the productive versus the subsidized. If you look at who was supporting Clinton, it was very much the rich subsidized, i.e. Silicon Valley, Hollywood, and Wall Street, and the people who make money in those bubbles, and the low-income government subsidized groups. And when you tell people who are productive, who are subsidizing you as you are becoming very rich at their expense, that they're deplorables, you add gas to the fire, and the deplorables turned out with a vengeance. The deplorables voted in numbers not seen for decades. So who are the deplorables? They're the people who were harmed by the housing bubble that was engineered by the Clintons. They are people harmed by the trade deal. See Sir James Goldsmith's wonderful video, which shows you that clearly the Clintons knew. When I was in Washington at the time, clearly the Clintons knew how that was going to harm people. It's people harmed by threats to Social Security after 50 trillion went missing in the coup d'etat, very much facilitated by the Clintons. It's people harmed by student loans. Clintons were instrumental in the Clinton administration in engineering the rules for student loans that would really sort of bankrupt the students who took them on. And, of course, pulling the ability of them, in fact, to protect themselves with the bankruptcy. People harmed by Common Core, heavy schedules of vaccines, threats to health freedom, a long list of items that have been facilitated by the Clintons and people who funded them. So all of these folks who got harmed in these ways were still required to play by the rules and pay taxes, while the Clintons and their friends got rich and got rich basically selling our classified information and government access in a way which was clearly criminal and clearly blatant. So what was interesting is WikiLeaks for the last 2 months has been steadily dripping out emails on Clinton, and literally in the last 6 weeks decapitated the Clinton team, systematically going after the campaign chairman, the campaign and personal attorney, the top aide, on and on and on. See my commentary, Campaign Whack-A-Mole. I also think that the NYPD getting a hold of Wiener's emails and intelligence networks won the election day, or literally won the election. It looks to me, my theory is that there was a backdoor deal where literally once the treasure chest of emails coming off of Wiener's laptop were in the hands of the NYPD. Remember, Giuliani, who was very much helping Trump, was the former mayor of New York, former prosecutor. I think with that package, they were able to basically go to Clinton's backers and get them to stand down. I don't believe that this is a popular vote that, won on the merits against the Clintons. I think you had a behind the scenes deal as to who was going to win as well. And if anything, if you look at what it was going to take to continue to destroy the Clintons by leaking information and emails, that was going to do a lot of harm to many members of the establishment, particularly information about the control file, blackmail, and pedophilia networks being run by Epstein and associated with the Clinton Foundation. So my guess is the real dirt was too much for the establishment to take, and Clinton's backers agreed to stand down. And that happened before the election. And so what we're seeing is basically two parts of the deep state struggle. On one side, on the Clinton side, you have more the financial side and the neocons. On the Trump side, Trump seems to have organized and managed to gain the support of sufficient military and intelligence networks. Long ago at the beginning, or in the middle of the primaries, I said that Trump could go all the way if he got sufficient support from military and intelligence, and that's what he did. Now, if you take a look at the transition team and what they're talking about in the 2 days following the election, what we're seeing is a vision of pulling back into North America as opposed to the more globalist vision of the Clintons, which was really to keep the unipolar vision going, which was probably going to take war with Russia. They are clearly eager to kickstart as much economic activity as possible. Number one, they're talking about tearing up Dodd-Frank. If you look at the impact of Dodd-Frank, it really didn't go far enough, and it created a lot of work for the innocent. So I'm not sure that will necessarily be particularly missed. They're talking about bringing back corporate cash. A lot of that is a tax issue of making the taxes on that lower, or freeing that cash from tax so it can come back in, as well as offshore funds. So I think you're talking about bringing in enormous amounts, even trillions of cash from offshore and bringing it back to revitalize the domestic economy. They're talking about literally pulling down some of the federal regulations that have been instituted under Obama to literally put the coal industry out of business. So revitalizing coal, I should note that the one of the few publicly traded coal stocks left since the Trump one is up 50%, Peabody Energy. But also encouraging even more oil and gas and fracking development. Finally, major infrastructure improvements between the oil and gas and infrastructure promises. You're seeing the railroads up 10%, except for Kansas City Southern, which has significant interests in Mexico. Obviously, Mexico is feeling the pressure. The private prison stocks have jumped 30%. Clearly, they're hoping to get a reprieve from the Republicans. Clinton is part of trying to win the election. Had said that they were, or the Obama Department of Justice had said it was not going to renew the Bureau of Contract Prisons, private prison contracts. The vision is much more the military and enforcement side of the House. Again, if Clinton is the financial side, then Trump is more the military and enforcement side. A little bit, it looks like, just as Obama converted a populist sweep to support the bailouts, we're looking at a Trump populist suite to support bringing all that corporate cash home, which is something that corporate cash has been trying to do for more than a decade. You can clearly see why somebody like Buffett might get behind this and sell Clinton down the river. It's very much positioned to rebuild North America. Railroads up 10% is certainly good for Buffett, who owns one of the largest railroads in the country, although it's private. The transition team is being run by Chris Christie. It very much looks like the Kemp team. There are a lot of players on it that I'm familiar with, having worked for Kemp. I could hear the Kemp voice when Trump started to say drain the swamp. That was a favorite expression that Kemp used to use during the HUD scandals. We're going to drain the swamp. Roger Stone, who helped to destroy the career of a very fine New York Times reporter, was writing a story on me as someone I've had indirect experience with. He had done a book on Bush and Clinton, sort of outing the sort of corruption of both of them. And you wonder how far back it was planned to really sweep the Bush and Clinton dynasties out of the way. It was something that was done on this election. As far as I'm concerned, it's a very positive step to get them swept out. You see Ed Fulmer from the Heritage Foundation as part of the transition team. And on domestic issues, Ken Blackwell, who was the former Assistant Secretary of HUD under Kemp. Now, Trump has promised a lot of people to stop the what I would call the anti-human agenda, including mandatory vaccinations, Common Core, gun control. He said he would appoint a special prosecutor, Rick Clinton, although if you look at his discussion or his description and of Clinton during his victory speech, he didn't sound like somebody who's about to appoint a special prosecutor. Whether or not he follows through on that anti-human agenda, let's see, or on stopping the anti-human agenda. And, of course, very big issue is the Supreme Court appointments. So it'll be interesting to see where he goes with the first appointment. Will he clean the neocons out? That's another big question. It's something that really does need to happen. So I put several links on the website on what he said in his Gettysburg address would be the first 100-day agenda, as well as some comments. Mitch McConnell has come out and said what he thought would be the first 100-day agenda for the Republicans in the Senate, including sweeping aside Obamacare. There was a great cartoon that someone posted, and I posted it or linked to it on my website at Solari. It's called American Roulette, and it had two revolvers. One said Clinton and one said Trump. And in the Clinton revolver, there were six bullets, the implication being, you know, you're going to get shot no matter what happened. And in the Trump, it had three bullets, so you had a 50% chance of living. So it's a very good feeling on Thursday to not be staring down the six bullets. At the same time, America is still staring down the three bullets. The deep state is firmly in control. Trump won because a major sort of section of the deep state got behind him. So in that sense, we're not looking at real change. We are looking at a shift of direction. We're looking at a group of enforcement and military that, in my opinion, has the good sense to understand that have to switch to a multipolar world. We can't keep holding on to the unipolar vision. And so they want to bring the cash back, revitalize, and pull into Fortress America behind the Atlantic and Pacific Ocean. And so you have a much more grounded vision of what is possible. So at the same time, if you look at what's going on in this country, it can't be solved top-down. It has to be solved bottom-up. I've republished my letter to my congresswoman about the importance of place-based financial statements. If you're going to revitalize local economies, you absolutely need to do that. You need to give much more flexibility to re-engineer federal money by place, bottom-up. The other thing, and I talked about this in my interview with Joseph and John on the election, my number one concern, and I think the number one risk to people in America and many other countries, is we are watching a mind control network rolling out that involves all sorts of entrainment and surveillance capitalism, invasion of privacy. Trump, Pence have said nothing about this topic, and as far as I can tell, there's no, you know, this is not on the map of many players, including the alternative media that was really covering the campaign, InfoWars, Matt Drudge. I think if you look at the federal government, it continues to be run by the same bank depositories and defense contractors who still control the operations of the U.S. government. While the telecommunications and social media in Silicon Valley are rolling out a mind control network that's going to go on overdrive with the introduction of 5G. And so I watch that happening. I watch no conversation about it, and I watch nothing being done about it. It's certainly not on this agenda, on the Trump-Pence agenda, let alone the first 100 days. And so I look at that, and I say in the deeper system, if you look at what's rolling out, it's only us that can really change this. money in markets, the dollar very strong, probably going up as a result to higher interest rates. We really saw a meltdown of the long-term treasury, which indicates higher rates. It's been as high, the long-term, the 20-year treasury ETF, TLT, has been as high as 20% this year as now. I'm working off the Wednesday close, was up 5.3% for the year. Thursday it closed up 3.75%. So that's quite a meltdown. The intermediate up 3.75, so not melting down as much. The bond aggregate now down to 3.72% for the year. Junk still holding at almost 12%. Equities are doing well. We're now up 7%, almost 8% on the S&P. Europe still down. VGK, the European ETF, down 2.5% for the year. Home builders, the Clinton vision of the happy home builders did not come true. Home builders now down 5% for the year. So that's a 12% spread against the S&P. S&P up almost 8%. Home builders down 5%. Germany now flat. It's down 0.32%. The developed markets minus North America flat. Up 0.04%. The China large caps almost up 5%. And again, this is total return, not just gains. And then the small caps off about 0.5%. Emerging markets still doing strong, up 13.5%. Commodities still in the black for the year, up 4.38%. Of course, the star performance is silver, up 32.3%, and gold up 19.81%. So they seem to be, we've had some consolidation, but the strength continues to be there. And oil struggling down 11.4%. Still some news we see, and this is really Team Bush getting swept out with Team Clinton. Theranos, the Silicon Valley darling that once upon a time had Kissinger, Schultz, and Riley Bechtel all on the board. Walgreens announced a lawsuit against them. That was their big partnership for $140 million. And it's fair to say that Theranos is toast. Important headlines. Armstrong has been following it, and I have it up at Soleri. The Dallas Police and Fire Pension Fund has an accelerating crisis with beneficiaries pulling money and in a situation where to really put it back on solid footing would require astonishing increases in property taxes in Dallas. We did an interview in early in January 2016 with Don Cox, and he said the number one issue after the election is going to be the pension funds. Of course, that problem has been made much worse by the pension funds assuming historical returns, and of course we haven't been getting historical returns with fixed income and interest rates running at extremely low numbers. And so it's extremely low interest rates has really exacerbated that problem, which was going to exist anyway. And it's really been not addressed by the, in the election. And it's really going to come to the fore. And it's not just going to be, we've had Detroit and Puerto Rico. Illinois is going to come into the news in a big way this year. Dallas Police and Fire Pension Fund, we're going to start seeing this more and more around the country. And it's one of the reasons I think that you're seeing the Trump team move in and planning to do everything they can to really kickstart growth in the United States as fast as possible. And I think that's really going to be the agenda in the first 100 days to get as much growth happening as quickly as possible. Our hero this week is the NYPD and Scott Adams. I also, we've had Assange many times, but I just heard an interview with Alex Jones and Roger Stone proposing U.S. citizenship and sanctuary for Assange. And actually, that's a pretty good idea if you look at his contribution to this election. But my hero is really NYPD, and I want to give an honorable mention to Scott Adams. I think that, as I said earlier, NYPD getting a hold of the Wiener laptop and holding the FBI and and other people's feet to the fire gave the Trump team what they needed to basically finally close the door on the Clintons. If you look at what NYPD got a hold of, you know, the problem was that taking down the Clintons was going to take down too many people, and I think Clinton's backers walked away. I do think Clinton's backers had what it took to really rig the election. Although with the RNC in full support of the Trump campaign, the Republicans clearly had the ability to rig plenty of elections, so I think the rigging was on both sides. But I really believe NYPD put it over the top, and it's interesting. If you look at Trump's victory speech, he indicates the importance of their role. Let's go to the movies. I keep beating the drum about the mind control technology, and I'm going to keep beating it because I really want to make sure you're protected against it. I wanted to talk about our movie this week is The Forgotten, which is a sci-fi mystery with Julianna Moore. It's about the intelligence agencies working with a group of aliens to memory wipe several parents and destroy the bond between mother and father and a child. Literally what they're trying to do is see if they can get mothers and fathers to forget that they had a child. And the question is why? If you look at where the pro-centralization team has failed consistently, it's because of the political power of the love of a mother or a father for kids, particularly mothers. Mothers who get the bit in their teeth are ferocious politically. That's why they could never win on homeschooling. That's why they've never been able to win on vaccinations. If you watch the movie Vaxxed or watch any of the interviews that the mothers in Vaxxed do after the documentary does a live showing, you're talking about mothers who are mighty and fearless force. And I believe absolutely that one of the priorities to see if you can bust that force as a political challenge. I've talked about my concern about the brawls that have occurred at Chuck E. Cheese. But the other day I called Franklin Sanders, it was about 2 months ago, and I said, how are you doing? He said, oh, I'm not feeling good. I said, why? He said, I keep getting asked to pray. He said, I don't know if you realize this, but there are mothers all over the country who are just spontaneously killing their children for no reason. And these are mothers that, you know, that are perfectly nice and reasonable human beings, and no one can explain it. It's completely out of character. So I started to research this and found out, yes, there is a pattern that is happening. And if you want my opinion, I think the chances are reasonably good that the technology is being prototyped to see if they can do this. Of course, then if they can succeed at getting the technology to work, then they'll apply it more broadly in ways which are not necessarily getting mothers to literally kill their children, but mothers to stop caring about protecting their children, whether it's protecting them from vaccinations or Common Core or any of these things. So I think it's another indication that this technology is being prototyped, and I think it's worth watching the movie The Forgotten to understand the issue and how important this issue is to control. So step back for the election for just a second. I think that NYPD probably had some pretty serious evidence on pedophilia rings that were dovetailing with the Clinton Foundation raising money. That's been the rumor and the allegations. If you look at money-raising operations like that, it's very rare that they occur without some form of sex slave benefits or blackmail. It's both. It's providing benefits, but it's also getting control files that can be used to blackmail if you need to. So that is a very typical pattern with fundraising and money laundering in those large amounts. And the reason a story like that could be so devastating is literally mothers and fathers, when presented with those kinds of stories, are absolutely appalled and change and act politically in very dramatic ways. So again, it's a mighty political force, and you helped to see that in The Forgotten. Our interview today, we're going to have Eric Best on scenario thinking, which I think is a wonderful technique and very important and valuable in this environment. Great for dealing with uncertainty. But there's so much interest in the election and there's so much to process in the election that I thought it would be important to switch in the interview we were going to do with John Rapoport, and then Joseph Farrell offered to join us. And so we did a three-way yesterday, and I wanted to get that published today. And so it's a great conversation. There's a lot to talk about, and I'm going to continue in Money and Markets every week to follow the first 100 days and keep talking about it. But it was a great conversation. One of the things we really focused on is the extent to which the corporate media has been shown to be as corrupt and completely corrupt as they are. Now, if you listen to Salieri Report, you've known that for a long time, but this election really proved the point many times over. And of course, my skepticism, I was much more on the side of being relieved that Clinton was not going to be president than thinking that we can answer or solve our problems by making anybody president of the United States. Not to discredit Trump for what he has accomplished, but I think I'm not one who believes that we can accomplish a lot top down. Certainly, a lot can happen top down that would be good for us, and I hope that happens. We'll be watching. But as I said, one of my skepticisms that I communicate in the interview is the mind control weaponry that really is being rolled out against the population, and we're not talking about that as a society, and it's very important to do something about it or to be protected from it. John made a very good point saying that the positive thing about this campaign was it got the conversation going, and the conversation got the movement going, and that movement has nothing to do with who's the president or not the president, and we have to keep it going. And I think he's absolutely right about that. And that's what the Salieri Report wants to be about. So anyway, it's a great interview. So listen and keep your questions coming. Ask Catherine. A lot of questions still coming in. If you read the questions, the comments, people around the nation are saying that they see an overwhelming ratio of Trump to Clinton signs. Yes, that's true. But somebody sent a link on the rural area, and it was in the rural areas where the vote for Trump was extraordinary. Interestingly enough, if you look at the highest state for Trump, it was Wyoming at 70%. The highest voting area for Clinton was the District of Columbia with 93% for Clinton and 4% for Trump. Kind of says it all. Hi, Catherine. I just want to thank you for your calm analysis here and the point to campaign whack-a-mole. And the Hillabots, all female, are making me a little nuts. The arguments I'm hearing are so insane, it's really hard to believe they're coming from otherwise intelligent women. For instance, is being endorsed by some podunk KKK paper really worse than being endorsed by the neocons? How is that rational? I don't know how you managed to keep a lid on it during the election years, but I'm going to try and follow your example. Thanks for all your diligent work and for being a rational voice in the middle of this insanity. Interestingly enough, Trump won with white women by a very significant margin ahead of Clinton. And it's interesting, they really voted for or voted against the person who had done them and their families harm over the last 30 years. So it was interesting to see how the real sort of granular numbers worked. But there's no doubt in the rural areas it was overwhelming for Trump. Dear friends, there is an issue that I believe is being overlooked, one that has more import and significance than any other that receives the high attention analysis speculation of the best minds, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. By keeping us focused on these mega issues, Mr. Global ensures that we overlook the deliberate annihilation of the very core of our individual and social well-being. And it goes on, and I'll put this all in the questions and answers. I'm not going to read the thing, but it's talking about the importance of our protection and creation of children, and something I care very much about, which is why I wanted you to watch The Forgotten and think about the importance of protecting the natural urges of mothers and fathers towards children. So I agree with you. I think that is a very, very important issue. And you're right. I think the mind control technology wants to make sure we resonate with the machine and not with each other. Anyway, dear Catherine, oh my, signed stealthily per usual. Let's see, Obama signed on Friday an executive order preparing Americans for a worldwide epidemic just days before the U.S. election. Oh, very gruesome. Anyway, so the order entitled Advancing the Global Health Security Agenda to Achieve a World Safe and Secure from Infectious Disease Threats, etc. I do hope Trump, if actually allowed to become president, does deliver on his promise to scrap all of the executive orders of the current president. We all know what happens to nice-sounding promises made on the campaign trail, yet people are now more awake than ever. So I'm hoping the momentum continues and that we, the people, hold his feet to the fire. I think reversing the executive orders is relatively easy to do. The issue will become, once he gets confidential briefings on a whole variety of issues, will he learn information that we don't have that will change his mind? But otherwise, reversing a lot of the executive orders is a good one. I think he will reverse the sanctuary cities pretty quickly. Hi, Catherine. Great interview with Jason Bowden-Smith. Please note that my wife and I would like to attend the Soleri Super Circle May 2008 Australian Outback trip. Got it. Anybody who requested places reserved has had a place reserved. I have more links to post for Jason and a proposal to come back with for the May 2018 trip. So check the EMF radiation commentary for that Soleri report for the links. I'll post them this weekend. What is going on with Ryanair disturbances seems to illustrate one of your recent points about chaos in public spaces. On the Yahoo UK site this morning, there's a big story about the Ryanair fight, but I couldn't find it anywhere on Yahoo. An hour later, I found these versions of the story elsewhere. That one was very interesting. It's another public brawl, this time on an airplane. And in fact, they had to make an emergency landing as a result of it. I took a look at it, and I couldn't tell to what extent it was another Chuck E. Cheese kind of Kingsman event or just, you know, sort of angry, worked up people. It could have been one or the other. I couldn't tell. But I think these things are going to keep happening more and more in public. And I really want you to, if you haven't watched the Kingsman campaign to, I'm sorry, the Kingsman, or the movie The Kingsman, or read my commentary, The Kingsman campaign, I would really encourage you to watch it. Because as I said, I think they're prototyping this technology for application broadly. It's a way of weaponizing the general population. Hello, Catherine. I listened to the most recent Soleri report with Jason Bowden-Smith. I'm writing to express interest in the Australian Outback with Soleri in May 2008. On and on and on. I've been interested in going to Australia for some time and would love to go and meet Catherine again, Jason, and Richard, along with other Soleri subscribers. Okay, we've got your place on hold. I also have a friend who lives in Australia and would likely extend my trip to visit them, along with visiting the Barrier Reef. Oh, please go. It's so beautiful. Catherine, after viewing the EMF radiation interview with Jason Bowden-Smith, I wanted to purchase a signal detector. I've looked at the web and found many units that state they will do the job. During the interview, Jason said he recommended a few meters, but I was unsuccessful rescanning through the presentation. Okay, so I'm going to post those links this weekend, and we'll get those all up. Dear Soleri Report, I'm searching for an interview in which Misfits illustrates the power and economic benefits of investing, borrowing, and lending locally and centralized. She talks about community members lending to one another via investing with a bank in New York and the benefits to both lender and borrower. I've scoured six Greg Hunter interviews and Thrive Movement clips, and I can't find it. Is there any chance you can direct me the correct video? We've sent you links to the Soleri audio seminar, Where Would Jesus Bank, and the Soleri report I did on local banking. So hopefully one of those interviews is what you're referring to. Hi, Catherine. I'm a relatively new subscriber. I stumbled across your Pista Sophia interview and was fascinated. I consider myself a total heathen, but I'm strangely resonating with the interview you did previously, I'm hoping you will provide an episode with what you learned from your recent trip centering around the Pisa Sophia, what new information you learned, what experience you have personally had, and key information that we as humans should know. I'm thinking about this. Thank you for the suggestion. I think it's essential to, when you talk about the pistis, for the listener to have read the text. So for something like this to work, I would need to get Ulrich, who's really a wonderful teacher on this topic, and we would need to read the text in a process where we read the text, then talked, then read the text, then talked. So let me noodle and think about how to do this, because I think it's very difficult for me to describe these things to you without having you read the text. Dear Darlene, I thought Jason said he would put information about products and notes with his interview with Catherine, et cetera, more time. I will make sure that we get them all collected up and posted this weekend. Dear Catherine, the fact that the pre-election polls got it so unbelievably wrong in the days leading up to the presidential election has me wondering whether we'll be hearing about massive election fraud over the coming weeks and months. Do you think the powers that be might have become greatly concerned about what might be revealed with a continuing spotlight on Hillary Clinton if she became president, and then they turned to do what they could to deliver the presidency to Donald Trump? Basically, yes. I think the NYPD gave the Trump team what they needed to do a deal. It could also have been, I should say, some of the FBI as well. Both sides had vote rigging capacity. The RNC ultimately was very supportive of the Trump campaign, but again, I think the Clinton team backed down. And that was because of both the sort of getting decapitated by WikiLeaks and the other leaks over the 6 to 8 weeks before the election, and also doing a deal behind the scenes that got that team to stand down. So the answer to your question is yes. Dear Catherine, how much do you think will be revealed to us about Donald Trump's true intent to create change by who he nominates to his cabinet? I think it will tell us some, but not all. Only time will tell. So it's something I'm going to be covering regularly, but I don't want that to deter us from understanding that real change is going to have to come bottom up. It's going to have to be a decentralized revolution. That's why I think Rappaport's description of the campaign getting a conversation going, but the conversation and the revolution is going to have to come by massive action of all of us. And the campaign has opened it up. But again, I think the deep state is very much in control, and it continues to come down to what each one of us does with our time, our money, and attention, as I've said now for 20 years, and we'll keep saying. Okay, so that's it in closing. Speaking about dealing with uncertainty, November 17th, Eric Best is going to be here for Scenario Thinking. Scenario design, scenario planning is a wonderful way to deal with uncertainty. It's a wonderful way to really give you mastery of dealing with multiple futures, even inventing your future. So that's a good one. And I postponed it because I didn't want it to get overrun by the election, because I think it's so important. November 24th, we have our next food series with Harry Blazers. It's remarkable. It's a 4-part interview with Francois Vecchio, the world's greatest butcher. Wonderful Swiss butcher who's now been in the United States for a while. And it's a remarkable, in-depth understanding of meat as food and very much about the food system and how it relates to life. Then December 1st, our introduction to Rudolf Steiner with T.H. Meyer, who I had the opportunity to interview when I was in Zurich. And I'm really looking forward to having that. We have a wonderful subscriber, Ann Watson, who's also been recording the agricultural course, and we're going to try and have that ready by December 1st with the Thomas Meyer interview. And that very much dovetails with some of the things that Harry's been doing on biodynamic farming on the food series. So until next week with Eric Best on November 17th, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not into conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.